Welcome to August. I want to thank all of you. July was the biggest month for downloads by a lot, by like plus 50%. So the show's really growing. Really appreciate that. All right. The other day, Trump spoke to Vladimir Putin. Trevor Noah weighed in big time. Three jokes from him. He said, first of all, I actually believe Trump when he says the intelligence briefing never reached his desk, because I mean, his desk is so full of Goya beans. Where are they going to put the files? But it is bizarre that Trump is the most impulsive president ever, except when it comes to Russia. I mean, people are protesting against the police and he's like, we've got to send in the troops, break it up, people, we got to destroy them. But when Russia's putting bounties on American troops, he's like, they're only lashing out because we hurt them. Like Dr. Jen says, hurt people, hurt people. One more from Trevor. I mean, I guess I can understand where Trump is coming from. It's super awkward bringing up to your buddy how he put a bounty on your soldiers' heads, you know? You're talking sports, you're talking chicks. You don't want to ruin the vibe with how he's spearheading a campaign to compensate enemy combatants for killing your troops. Zero chill, man. Zero chill. From Gizmodo, your home for comedy news. It is the 35th anniversary of Back to the Future. There's a brand new anniversary Blu-ray set. And there's some news. There's a featurette that will include never-before-seen auditions for the film, featuring people like Ben Stiller and John Cryer. Both of them agree that Michael J. Fox was never in danger of losing the role of Marty. However, the memory got Cryer thinking about how the version of the film he auditioned for was not at all like the one that hit theaters. He said, it opened with Marty McFly playing the Close Encounters theme on his electric guitar while he pirated a VHS cassette of the movie, and the time machine wasn't a DeLorean that had to travel at 88 miles per hour and have 1.2 gigawatts of power. Well, that's really specific, guys. But just, well, it was just a time machine that needed nuclear fission and a secret ingredient that turned out to be Coca-Cola. The final sequence didn't involve a clock tower or a lightning bolt, but instead finds Marty sneaking onto an atom bomb test site with his time machine to be near the nuclear fission that he needs for it to work. In an eerie scene, he finds the test site is complete with exquisitely detailed suburban houses and mannequins to simulate the effects of an atomic explosion on an American town. He gets the time machine in place. The atom bomb's about to go off. He's reaching for the Coca-Cola. The countdown is at 10, 9, 8. When he slips and drops the bottle, it shatters on the ground. He's all out of Coke. He panics, but then he remembers he's in the 1950s and any self-respecting American suburban home has a bottle of Coke in the refrigerator. He checks, and sure enough, there's one in there. He pours it in the time machine, but then realizes, oh crap, he has to figure out how to survive an atomic explosion. He panics. Then it dawns on him there's a lead-lined box nearby, otherwise known as a refrigerator. He climbs in, he closes the door, and the bomb goes off. The time machine activates, and he's simultaneously shot back to the future. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Clearly, Spielberg loved the scene and repurposed it decades later in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Ben Stiller does not remember any of those details at all. Screen Crush points out that Cryer's recollection of this early version of Back to the Future is only partially accurate. He's right about the fridge and the Coke, but the fridge was actually the time machine itself, not something powered by the nuclear explosion. Even after the time-traveling fridge was jettisoned for a DeLorean, the idea of a nuclear explosion sending it through time continued to be developed. There are even animated storyboards showing what that might have looked like. That's a lot of fun, right? I also, that entire time I'm reading the story, I had such a hard time saying Marty because I'm on such a Rick and Morty kick now. And in case you don't get the joke, Rick and Morty's making fun of Back to the Future. More from Parade Magazine's interview with Jim Gaffigan. Hey, Jim Gaffigan, did your observational comedy style come naturally? Jim said, I tried different things on. It took a while to discover who I am, but authenticity is important. He's very authentic. And if you pretend to be someone you're not, the audience picks it up. I do pick that up. Is that why you've embraced being a family-friendly comic? Jim says, nobody pays to see a comedian because they don't curse. I suppose there are comedians that like to be irreverent and brave, but if it's not funny, then those bolder adjectives don't matter. It's strange about the whole clean thing. I do curse in everyday life. I'm from Indiana. You curse if you stub your toe. But if you're telling a joke for the fifth time, do you really need to curse, or can you think of a better adjective? Tammy Pascatelli spoke to the Canton Reps. She said, I do think some things needed canceled or called out, and I'm glad we had time to take a look at it. But then I related to cleaning with my grandmother. Once the house is clean, we don't need to scrub the bricks with a toothbrush. You know what I mean? She would just find something else to clean. That's like my wife. She said, when people want to be offended, they tend to find what they're looking for. In comedy, it's the hardest because it's not meant to be in 30-second snippets or 140 characters. You're supposed to consume comedy in that comic's entirety. Not only did we have the quarantine where people couldn't go anywhere, but the world changed. People started taking umbrage with certain words or things you might have said. A lot of times people are going crazy because they're interpreting your words and the voice in their head. I'm an outspoken loudmouth. There's no interpreter for me other than some fat guy reading daily comedy news in my voice, apparently. If I want to say it in a way that's offensive, I know how to. John Cleese would probably agree. He spoke to the Chicago Tribune. He's promoting a special that he's doing tomorrow night that I'll tell you about in a second. He had originally planned to take his one-man show, Why There Is No Hope, on tour this fall, but, you know, pandemic and stuff. So he said, why not stream it? So he decided to stream it. And he said, so we're going to do it in a small theater in the UK, and we're going to have maybe 40 people there, carefully socially distanced, so that I can do the speech to them. So they might giggle now and then to encourage me. And then they'll be able to ask questions, which will be much more spontaneous than if we had people write questions and send them in. It was an idea I had, and God knows, I always have ideas, don't act on them. But it was years ago I thought there's a speech to be made here about how there is no hope. Not that there's no hope for us individually, but there's no hope that we'll ever live in an intelligent, fair, kind, well-organized society. So if this interests you, Why There Is No Hope, tomorrow, Sunday, August 2nd, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm sure if you Google it, you will find the link, and it's PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13. I lost my note here. I want to tell you it was only like $15. It wasn't anything crazy, for sure. So that's tomorrow at 6 Eastern. That's your daily comedy news for today. And I'll be back tomorrow. Subscribe and rate and review and all that later.